Join the Football Pod on Off The Ball.
You don't have that many years as a player. You can't scratch off a year and have a bad year just because your coaches are gone. You have to be strong enough to be able to say, we're still going to have a great year.
Join in the obsession and tune in to the Football Pod on Off The Ball in partnership with AIB.
The News Run on Off The Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Wednesday night's Off The Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up tonight, we're going to be speaking to Stephen Bradley, the Shamrock Rovers manager. This is part of our Inner Drive series with Allianz. Nathan spent some time with him over the last couple of weeks. His wife as well. Former players, coaches who've worked with Stephen Bradley, and it's an absolutely amazing piece which is available now for all to listen to on podcast. But we're going to play the full conversation between 8 and 9 tonight. Before that, we'll be speaking to Gerry Thornley here in studio for Wednesday Night Rugby, and then after that at 9 o'clock we're going to be speaking to Niamh Concour, one of the forwards for the Kerry football team. So a busy show coming your way. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp. Colin Mullaney will be bringing you the news round momentarily. Colin, how are you doing?
Hi lads.
Nathan is here as well. How are you, Nathan?
Hey, on.
One last pitch on this Stephen Bradley piece. As I say, it's available for all to listen to. This was a multi-day shoot.
It was. And I don't think there's many people in Irish sport who have a story quite like Stephen Bradley, from his own playing career and being the boy wonder of Irish football at 15 and going to Arsenal on a sort of unprecedented contract at the time, to it not working out and then going through a really horrific attack in London that altered the course of his life. Retires at 26, having won a couple of League of Ireland titles, managing Rovers by the time he's 30, does all that great stuff on the pitch. And then, as I'm sure a lot of listeners are aware, the terribly sad story that his son Josh was diagnosed with leukemia around three and a half years ago now. So we speak with his wife, Emma, who talks so eloquently and so courageously about what they've gone through over the last few years. Glenn Cronin, his assistant, who's been with him along the way on some of the things they've been through. And Gavin Mizzou came over as well.
He's brilliant. After the day. Really good talker.
Yeah, and you can tell even by the way he talks, very influenced by Stephen Bradley. Just has that calm demeanour, takes a second before answering any question. And even though Bradley was only his first team manager for an incredibly short period of time, four games before he ends up, no, he's 16, he saves that penalty against Cork before he ends up moving to Manchester City. Anytime Gavin Bazunu's in Dublin, he's out at Rolestone at their training facility. He knew all of the kids that were out there, that all the current academy crop, he seemed to know them all by name. And yeah, you kind of, don't want to say you forget about Gavin Bazunu, but you really want him to do well after sitting down and speaking to him for an hour. And I really hope he gets back in at Southampton or wherever it is next year. So yeah, Gavin Bazunu was so good with his time. So yeah, it's about an hour long and there's a lot in it.
Do you remember watching Stephen Bradley's footballer? Do you remember hearing the hype about him?
No, and I'd be a couple of years older than Stephen, and it was a time when a lot of Irish players were going to England, and there was players like, say, Willow Flood, who you would have heard of at the time, who was going over, really highly rated. From talking to people who remember that period, and even I was chatting to Liam Brady around the time we were recording it, like Stephen Bradley was the one. He was, you know, he was captaining.
He says it himself in the interview, you know, I was the best footballer of my generation.
Well, he tells a story, and we were chatting about it off air. Like, it's insane. So there's a bit of him, and this was not unusual at the time, of him getting the flight over to England at 10 or 11 by himself, of course, and you're picked up by somebody at the other side. But he's, one week he's at Liverpool, and he's like scoring a hat-trick at Anfield in an under-15 game against Everton. And then he leaves Liverpool and he goes straight to Everton for the next week. And he plays for Everton. And then he goes from there to Manchester City. He's up at Celtic, he's at Arsenal. And what comes across is that these weren't trials in any way. These were the clubs trying to impress him by rolling out the red carpet with all of their best facilities and all of their best people and all of their legends to meet him and all that stuff to convince him to sign for them. And not surprisingly, it was Liam Brady running the academy at Arsenal that got the deal done. But it's one of the reasons I think that he is so well positioned to talk about what's going on in Irish football and to look after some of those great talents, because he's seen how quickly it can all go wrong.
It's a phenomenal piece, to be fair to you, Nathan. So 8 to 9, if you've missed out on the Stephen Bradley piece, we're going to play it out in full that
to
hour.
To be fair to you, has a tone of...
No, I mean, you've done some good work.
I wasn't expecting much from you.
You've done some good work.
For once, finally, you delivered something.
Yeah, you know, like it's whenever I listen to like a particularly insightful episode of Golf Weekly. It's like, to be fair to Nathan, he...
How often does that come about? From time to time, actually, get this thing quite right.
From time to time. Right, the news round is with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. And you are beginning this evening, Cahill, with rugby.
Yeah, the Lions head coach Andy Farrell says Jameson Gibson Park is nearing a return to full fitness. The Irish scrum half missed Leinster's URC final with the Bulls last weekend, but a scan has revealed that the injury, which is a glute problem, is not too serious. Friday's meeting with Argentina comes too early for Gibson Park, with three Irish players included in the starting team. Finlay Beelan will start in the front row, Tadhg Byrne is in the second row, and Bundayaki will line out in the centre. Ronan Kelleher, Tadhg Furlong and Mac Hansen are all on the bench. As for Argentina, well, Julian Montoya will captain the visitors, while former Connacht back Santiago Cordero is among the replacements for Argentina. And Andy Farrell was speaking earlier today in Dublin at a press conference ahead of that game on Friday, and he told reporters what he wants to see from his players in the game.
Cohesion, connection, an ability to attack the game from the off, to be the best version of themselves, not just individually but collectively as well. So, you know, you can give yourself any excuse as far as time together, etc. You know, we've had good prep, and if you want to be a good Lions player, you gotta hit your straps straight from the off. So we want to see these players compete.
We've been spending a bit of time today watching the Fly on the Wall documentary around the Lions. Nathan, this is called The Ultimate Test. It's going out weekly, it seems, on YouTube. So it's a bit different to previous renditions of, say, Living with the Lions, where you'd get like a big blockbuster sort of version at the end of the tour. This is actually being serialised as it happens, which is quite an interesting insight. Johnny Sexton is a big part of episode one. Marcus Smith's a big episode one. If you want to see the dynamic between Tommy Freeman and Pierre Schoeman and their bants, this is...
I think Schoeman's going to be a star of the show.
He's got that potential, doesn't he? The two of them were scrummaging in their room. Did you spot the Cork GA jersey in it?
I did. So they're at the campus, which is a facility in, I think it's in Quinta do Lago in Portugal, where a lot of teams go and do their pre-season warm-ups and all of that. And yeah, they've got a Cristiano Ronaldo jersey, and then there's an Ireland rugby jersey, and then there's a Cork jersey. Like, the Cork lads, typical enough, they didn't give them Pat Horgan's jersey, they gave them a number 29.
Doesn't even make the match squad.
No, if we hadn't left over, lads, don't be giving away the good jerseys.
Yeah, it's in the background of an Alan Walters piece to camera or chat with the interviewer, who also seems like a pretty interesting guy. There's this moment where he like goes down on his hands and knees and picks up some grass on the training paddock, and not only does he sniff it, he actually eats the grass. Starts eating the ground, earthing himself
That's a good start. They have a lot to live up to, because like Living with the Lions from 97 is one of the great sports documentaries. And, you know, being in the physio's room as Will Greenwood is in the greatest agony known to man, and you're seeing it all laid bare. Now we see so much of this, and it can often feel a little bit contrived at times. So I hope they get that balance of, you know, showing the good and the bad. But it was an okay start. The Sexton Marcus Smith cameo, because it was only, 30 seconds?
Very insightful.
Really insightful in that, so it's basically Marcus Smith is lining up to take a kick, and he's showing Johnny Sexton the angle that he runs from. And Sexton's like, well, maybe just take a step to the right, because you're having to turn your body so sharply at the end. This is a far more straightforward. But it's one of those moments where you're like, surely somebody has said this to Marcus Smith previously. But the bizarre thing is, the more you find yourself talking to sports people or around sports people, that some of these guys get to an incredibly high level by either not listening to everybody around them, or everybody being a little bit fearful of getting them to change their technique. So Marcus Smith obviously kicks that way because he feels quite comfortable. And maybe actually nobody has ever said to him before Johnny Sexton, maybe if you just took a step to the right, this might feel a whole lot more natural.
More room is what Sexton says. You give yourself more room if you take that step to the right, and then we don't see where the ball goes after he kicks it, but Johnny Sexton
for the key.
Well, yeah. However, we do see Sexton beaming.
Okay.
So either he's done a very, very good job as a coach, or else he's like, successful inside job, I'm making this England out half worse, and that's what I'm here to do.
Well, what you'd love is, obviously, post all of this in 6 months' time, and people are talking to Mark Smith, like, oh, we saw that interaction with you and Johnny Sexton. I'm like, this guy. Yeah, as if I've never tried that before.
All right, Captain Obvious. Yeah, thanks, Johnny.
Yeah. Wow, this is the high level of coaching I came to expect when I got selected for the Lions.
It's really good insight. Really enjoyed it. So it's just so interesting that it's. I know it's not the first time they've done it like this. Again, like I'll be having this conversation with Jerry a little bit later on, but I kind of just have blacked out in my mind the idea of the Last Lions tour, and I think they serialized it on YouTube the last time. Possibly the
everything around the Last Lions tour was grim.
Yeah. It really was. It really, like, that being said, it was also right up there in terms of one of the more dramatic when you have Razzie Erasmus versus officialdom of world rugby at that point. It was pretty spectacular on that front, but the rugby was putrid.
Well, I'm biased from our work point of view because we had the commentary rights, and I remember sitting in here, was it the Wednesday evening? We did. Wow. We did. Landed with the Irish sporting public, and the night they called the game off, and our entire show was built around.
Oh, God, yeah.
This match commentary that. Just never happened.
But
there was a COVID outbreak, was there, in the camp and they had to call off the game?
Oh my God.
Or did they somehow go ahead with it with like a totally reserve team? It was just the whole thing was a mess.
That is just brain fog. Like I just cannot remember any of that happened, despite the fact that I worked in this.
So episode two, I'm sure, will be out soon. Who do you want to see?
You want to see more of Mac Hansen, to be fair. He does he does get a bit of time on the mic and in a team meeting. I think he's probably who we all want to see. A bit more Finlay Beelam. I think Finlay Beelam, you'd never complain with a little bit of him. And obviously Henry Pollock.
Finn Russell, Johnny Sexton time. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll make it happen. And they should be put up together, top table as well, for a press conference at some stage.
That'll be Finn of just opening your body a little bit. That'll be a great piece from Sexton. Just keep telling them all the same thing.
Right, we do have World Rugby Under 20 team news and a squad announcement.
Yeah, Connacht's Aina McCarthy will captain Ireland in the World Rugby Under 20 Championship this summer. Head coach Neil Doak today named a 30-man squad. That tournament's set to begin at the end of this month. Meanwhile, Jane Neal has been named as the Ireland Women's Under 20 captain for next month's Six Nations Summer Series in Wales.
Texan here from Pat saying Bazunu should leave Southampton. I don't think he will get in ahead of Ramsdale. Shame, because he's a very good keeper.
Well, I think the possibility is that Ramsdale may leave Southampton, that he obviously has aspirations to play for England at the World Cup next year, and that being a championship goalkeeper may not be for him.
Mm-hmm. We have a Conference League draw.
Yeah, Shamrock Rovers will face either Cliftonville or St. Joseph's from Gibraltar in the second round of qualifying for the Conference League. The Hoops are due to be at home for the second leg of that tie, which will take place at the end of July. If St. Patrick's Athletic win their first round tie, they'll play either Kalju from Estonia or Albanian club Partizani in the next round. And in Champions League qualifying, if Shelburne defeat Linfield, they'll face the Azerbaijani champions Karabag in the next round.
Is this a good draw, Nathan?
I think maybe Carabag aren't quite the team they were previously, but it's still a heck of a trek. The key is to make sure they get through that first round against Linfield, because then it opens up your next steps through Europa League, through Conference League, getting deeper into that and getting ever closer to the Conference League group stage, which, let's be honest, is the ultimate aim here.
The
chances of qualifying for Champions League or Europa League are probably quite slim, but I think they would have been really happy yesterday with Linfield, with the lack of travel, with Linfield, I think, are a good bit stronger than Larne were last year, but I think it's probably as good a draw as they could have gotten. Then you get your trip out of it after that.
Yeah, Shamrock Rovers against Cliftonville potentially, and Shelburne versus Linfield in the one summer is pretty exciting stuff, to be fair. We have a statement from Drogheda United.
Yeah, Drogheda United's owners say they will cover the shortfall in revenue from missing out on competing in Europe this season. The Louth club lost their appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport earlier this week. Around their participation in qualifying rounds for the Conference League, Drogheda were excluded, as Silkeborg, who also count the Trevella Group as their majority owners, had already qualified. And under UEFA rules, two clubs with the same owners cannot compete in the same European competition. In a statement issued earlier today, co-chairman at Drogheda, Ben Boycott, told supporters that day-to-day operations will be unaffected by their loss of expected revenue from Europe this season.
So Trevella Group are just going to stump up the cash?
Yeah, it seems that way. That would have been one of the concerns with Drogheda going full time at the start of the year, and there were bonuses for Europe and increased wages because of Europe and the guarantee of that €525,000 that would have put the club in a spot of bother financially. So it's good to see that Travella have stepped up for that. They haven't thrown anyone else under the bus. I think in one way they've put their hands up and said, yes, we missed this. I think they do point the finger of blame at UEFA and feel that there is a different way of dealing with certain clubs. So, you know, we've spoken about this. Obviously, it goes down to a deadline and a date, and people will now have seen that the FAI were sent a letter in October telling them that the date had changed. That hadn't been passed on to the clubs. At the time, Drogheda weren't in Europe. At the time, Drogheda didn't own Silkeborg as well. And I think the onus would always be on the club to go and seek this information out. But what Drogheda are claiming in that is that other clubs around Europe, bigger clubs in a similar scenario, were contacted directly by UEFA in January and February to say, hey, make sure your house in order here. New deadline, 1st of March. Whereas they weren't. They were left completely in the dark about it.
I thought your interview with Kevin Doherty on Monday was very striking, just the sheer devastation on his face and what sort of impact that's going to have on the whole setup, on the squad, because obviously that was going to be probably the high point of their season, wasn't it, to play in Europe?
Absolutely. It's like, and they were so well positioned for it, because if you think back, the cup win was a bit of a shock. They were in the promotion relegation playoff. Whereas now this year, they were challenging, shall we say, for the title, but they're certainly challenging for a European position this year. And they're actually in really good form, have added nicely to their squad. So probably would have felt they could have made a bit of an impact on Europe and got through a round or two in Europe. And yeah, Kevin Doherty was totally devastated. And part of that was, I think he was convinced that they were going to win at the Court of Arbitration for Sport because of some of the reasons that Travella have outlined, that they weren't contacted. Now, I've seen other arguments that even if the old deadline was in place, Silkeborg only qualified for Europe a couple of days before that. So would they have had everything in order for the first, 2nd of June if that was the case? I'm not sure. But it's just a mess. And the fact that there's nobody there to replace them makes it an even greater mess.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to predict if this is going to be the sort of thing that propels them on to have a great domestic season beyond this point, because it started bloody well for them, or is it going to be the sort of thing that's just going to have a fatiguing impact on them, because they can get European football again next year through their finishing the league for sure. We should move on to some transfer news, Cathal.
Yeah, Sligo Rovers have announced the signing of midfielder Seb Quirk from Accrington Stanley. The 23-year-old joins Rovers on July the 1st officially. That's subject to international clearance. Elsewhere, the former St. Pat's goalkeeper Vitislav Jaros has signed a new contract with Liverpool, but he will spend next season on loan at Ajax.
Now, Nathan Murphy's favourite day of the year.
Premier League champions Liverpool will start their title defence against Bournemouth at Anfield on August the 15th. That's after the release of the Premier League fixtures earlier today. That'll be the opening game of the new season. Kickoff for that one will be at 8 o'clock on a Friday night. Arsenal away to Manchester United in the opening round of fixtures. Elsewhere, Europa League winners Tottenham host newly promoted Burnley, while Leeds take on Everton, and Sunderland, who went up via the Championship playoffs, will face West Ham in their first top flight match in 8 years. Meanwhile, fans have been warned by the Premier League that fixtures could be moved at relatively short notice next season. 9 clubs have qualified for UEFA competitions, and the Premier League says there's an increased likelihood that games will be rescheduled if those clubs reach the latter stages of those competitions. The Premier League said that people planning to attend games need to take that into consideration.
You find great excitement in a day like today, don't you?
Oh yeah. I sort of look at the calendar, plot out my season, even though they've only announced the changes for the opening weekend, so we know what the first Sunday games are. I sort of look ahead and go, oh, I wonder, that'll probably be a 4:30 on a Sunday. I might get to go to that one. You sort of, you know, make sure there's no birthday parties or anything like that on certain weekends when there might be a big game. Plot out a few of the different type of matches you might want to go to. Number one on the list this year, what do you think it's going to be?
For a neutral, probably Liverpool, Manchester City?
Well, Liverpool, Manchester City always is top of the list. No. Newcastle, Sunderland.
Okay, yeah, of course.
Good shout.
I've been to Newcastle, Sunderland and Sunderland, Newcastle. And yeah, I had Steve Howie do co-commentary on Sunderland against Newcastle at the Stadium of Light. And we had to get a taxi right to the door of the media room, because he basically couldn't walk from train station or wherever he would normally go. He had to be straight in the door, nobody see him, straight up to the press box, and same on the way out again.
So we have rights for a Sunday, so that means you do exclusively Sunday games. That means you can't get to Newcastle at 5:30 on a Saturday?
we can always find a way of doing these things on. One of the great things for us on a Sunday is going to be the fact that there are so many English teams in Europe.
Yeah.
Means loads of games are going to be on a Sunday, so we're going to have the pick of them every Sunday here on Off the Ball.
Excellent. Yeah, for sure. It just feels that St. James's Park, 5:30 Saturday, is kind of like bucket list territory for a lot of people. Don't know why. There's something about that slot.
Yeah, no, I'd often get asked, oh, if you were to go to a game, and obviously people want to go to Liverpool and Manchester United and all that, but if you're recommending where to go, like Newcastle is, if you're going, maybe not with family, if you're going for a weekend away, Newcastle is the place to go to, because it doesn't matter whether it's a 12:30 on a Saturday or a 5:30 on a Saturday, the atmosphere when you come outside the ground is going to be the exact same. Everyone is going to be on it.
And it's like a Cardiff situation as well, right? Where the stadium's in a great location.
Yeah. It's as if St. James's Park is at the top of Grafton Street.
Okay.
You are right out onto the main strip in Newcastle, which is both literally and metaphorically speaking there when you come out of St. James's Park. Yeah, so if you get a chance to go to St. James's Park, do.
Cathal, we have news on Mikhaila Mudryk.
Yeah, the Chelsea winger has been charged with violating the Football Association's anti-doping rules. The Ukraine international was provisionally suspended in December after returning a positive test. Mudryk, who's always denied any wrongdoing, could face a ban of up to 4 years if he's found guilty. There's also some managerial news this evening inside the last hour that Chris Wilder has left Sheffield United as expected.
We do have Club World Cup action.
Yeah, Manchester City have kicked off their Club World Cup campaign with a win. They beat Moroccan side Wydad Casablanca by 2-0 earlier this evening. Phil Foden was among the goal scorers there. There's another game on at 8 o'clock. That's Real Madrid. They're in action with Trent in the starting team for their game against Al Hilal from 8 o'clock in Miami.
It feels like you're going to be getting really stuck into the Club World Cup.
I haven't so far.
You haven't yet, no?
No, no. I was a bit disappointed after Auckland's performance on Sunday night.
Well, to be fair, when we did the piece last week and we were looking ahead to it, the question was asked, how are you going to stop Harry Kane? How many goals did Harry Kane score? Zero.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. So you think that was part of their master plan? They just hadn't thought about anybody else.
Too focused on one player.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, what did the players do? Like, did they just like treat it as sort of like a holiday to some extent? Because they need a break of some sort.
It completely depends who you are. Like, we had Tim Vickery on last night, and even the finances aside, he reckons that this is such a prestigious opportunity for the South American teams, and they feel they can win it. For teams like Auckland City, who are amateurs, maybe it's more of an opportunity to play against some of the best players in the world, and then for the best players in the world and the best teams in the world, maybe for them it's kind of like, geez, the body's exhausted at the end of a long year, and I don't know if I can be arsed with this.
I think we're in the most patronising part of the world for
big time
football tournaments that aren't Premier League, Champions League, World Cup or European Championship. Look at the attitude that's there to the African Cup of Nations. Almost that, does it really matter? Yes, it does. In fact, maybe it matters more than winning a European Championship. And likewise, I think for even a lot of the players that are there, even at Manchester City and Chelsea, that they will put a lot of prestige on this.
Yeah.
And you'd have to think, if FIFA keep investing the way they are, that the prestige of it is only going to grow. Like, there obviously are plans that maybe they might try and do it every second year.
Nah, that would be a disaster, I think, certainly how this one has started. Nathan, good stuff. We'll be chatting to you throughout the evening, and your piece with Stephen Bradley coming up after 8 o'clock. Cathal Melaney.
Cheers, lads.
Thank you.
In case you missed this morning's Off the Ball breakfast, we had this.
Did I correctly hear / read somewhere that you're known as the Indiana Jones of sports writing?
I'll take it to the bank. I'm in less glamorous surroundings now. I'm in Lowestoft. So, you know,
yeah.
I'm not sure if Harrison Ford has ever visited Lowestoft.
And there was also some of this.
You know when you have American cousins and they come over and they say, well, what is hurling? And that's the game that I put on. Like, I don't, like, people talk about the 2017 All-Ireland against Waterford and so on, but that 2015 game was probably one of the most memorable games, I would say. I was involved in anyway.
Catch up now elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning when Off The Ball Breakfast is live from 7:30 on your OTB social channels.